We embark this evening on our 19th year of Shiurim. As I came in this evening, I was wondering, is there a special gematria for 19? You know, 17 is Tov and 18 is Chai. I couldn't think of one for 19. But then it occurred to me that the only thing that's actually better than a gematria is a Dvar Torah. So we can actually get back to the Shiurim themselves. And I feel that there's no more appropriate way to embark on a year of Shiurim, beginning the Torah again, than by referring to a comment that relates to the days that we have just been through. It's a very busy time, Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. And at the end of Sukkot, we have Shmini Atzeres. In Chutz Laaretz, there was a great deal of Yom Tov this year. It's difficult to know when it's Yom Tov. Even on Sunday, I wasn't sure whether it's still Shabbos there. But the Yomim Tovim end with Shmini Atzeres. And Rashi, in Parshas Pinchas, where the Torah presents Shmini Atzeres, explains the nature of the day. After all, unlike Sukkot, there isn't anything significant or distinctive that we do. There's no lulav, there's no sukkah, just, so to speak, Yom Tov. And Rashi quotes from the Medrash, and it's also Gemara and Maseches Sukkah, the marshal of the king. He has his servants, his special people, and they're together for a while. And when the time comes to leave, so the king says, Kosha elai predaschem. Hard to take leave of each other. So akvu iti od yom echad. So stay with me another day. And that day is Shmini Atzeres. It's because it's hard to leave that we stay another day. These are the words of Rashi. And Mefarshim wonder, how exactly does this solve the problem of kosha alai pedaschem? The problem is, it's difficult to leave. So, what's the solution? Stay. Another day. 24 hours later, you have to leave. So, putting off a problem for 24 hours is not normally an effective way of dealing with it. It's called procrastinating. Moreover, not only does it seem to be just putting the problem off, if anything, one could say it deepens the problem. Because if the problem is we're so close, it's difficult to leave, so what will happen if you stay another day? Closer! And then it'll be harder to leave. So the longer you stay, the worse it gets. But it seems like by the time Shmini Atzeres is finished, we're okay. We can leave now. Why is it okay now? Whatever happened to Kosher like Predaschem should be now Predaschem with a capital pay. Mefarshim explained. The year begins with a series of Yom Tovim, as we mentioned. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, each of them are fundamental and critical in terms of the message and the experience. And now comes a delicate time where the Yom Tovim end and, in a sense, the year begins. The business part of the year begins. And the difficult question is, so what about this month that's just passed? What about all of those days, events, and experiences, and attainments? Are they to be left behind? This is really what's behind the sentiment of Kosher Elai Predaschem. After everything that we've achieved by being close to Hashem during these special days, difficult to leave, but we have to leave. But difficult to leave it behind. That's kosher alai. The question is, what's the antidote? The antidote comes in the form of Shmini Atzeres. The word Atzeres, Shmini of course is the eighth day, the word Atzeres means on a simple level to stop, Atzor. But the word La'atzor means not only to stop, but also to collect, also to retain. If something is otzer, otzer mayim. The goal of Shmini Atzeres is to try and retain and collect all of the feelings and all of the perspectives that we have been working so hard for during these weeks of the Yomim Noraim and of Sukkot. And therefore, if a Shmini Atzeres is used successfully, it will be not so hard to leave. Because when we leave, we take those days with us. And this brings us to the twin event of Shmini Atzeres, which is Simchas Torah, where we end the Torah and immediately we begin again. For that's the secret of not having to leave these days behind. If we're wondering, you can't take days with you, the days have to stay, but the content of the days, how do we take that with us? The answer is through finishing the Torah and beginning it again. For the Torah we can take with us. And as we live the year accompanied by the Torah, that's a way of retaining the lines of energy open to those experiences. We're connected to those days. And indeed, as is pointed out, this is an idea which has ramifications. No less an authority than the Keren Ora, Rabbi Yitzchak of Karlin, in Maseches Moed Katan, raised a question on Simchas Torah, second day Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz, first day Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael. Not only is it Yom Tov, but also we make a Siyum. We have a principle of Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha. We don't take two different types of joyous events and put them together. Each event needs its own space. That's actually why the halacha is, one of the reasons given by the Gemara there in Moed Katan and Daf Zayin, one doesn't get married on Yom Tov. Not only because the logistics would be horrendous, but Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha, the pasuk says, V'samachta B'Chagecha V'lo B'Ishtecha. Every matter of Simcha needs full focus. If you're Samech in the Yom Tov, you can't be Samech with your wife, and you should be, and vice versa. And that being the case, how is it that we can have Simchas Torah on Yom Tov? Why do we not say, Ein Marvim Simcha B'Simcha, V'samachta B'Chagecha, V'lo B'Tarasecha, if one could adapt the phrase. But once we understand that concluding the Torah and beginning the Torah again is not a separate concern to the atmosphere of Shmini Atzeres. Rather, it's the tool through which we hope to affect the goal of Shmini Atzeres. If Shmini Atzeres says, retain these experiences and allow them to travel through the year with you, the way to do that is through beginning the Torah again, so it actually works in concert with Shmini Atzeres. It's all one simcha. There's no issue of conflicting simchas of Ein Ma'arim Simcha with simcha. So these, I believe, are very valuable thoughts to take with us as we embark, Mitz Hashem, on another year of study of Torah. The Torah is not only lessons for that day, but it allows us to keep in touch with the opening days of the year. The opening days are the Rosh Hashanah, they're the head of the year, Mitz Hashem. As we enter into the body of the year, we shouldn't leave the head behind. We should take it with us. Our shiurim, for scheduling reasons, did not allow us to take a look at Parshas Bereishis. We open in Parshas Noach, but I would like to begin the Noach shir in Parshas Bereishis, because Noach himself makes his first appearance in the end of Parshas Bereishis, and that is in Perek Hay, Pasuk Kaftes. So we have the generations, which they were on the one hand generations, they were also degenerations. And in Pasuk Kavches we have Lemech. There's two people in Parshas Bereishis called Lemech. This is the second. He's the father of Noah. Vayichi Lemech. Shtaymishmona Shana. Umash Shana. So he lived for those years, 182 years. Vayoled Bein. Vayikra Eshemo Noach Lemor. He called him, this child Noach, saying, Zeh, and Zeh has two Tami HaMikra. It's a small word, but it's got a lot of traffic of Tamei Mikra. Ze yinachameinu mima'aseinu u'mi'etzvon yodeinu. This will yinachameinu, How would you translate? Maybe let's leave it untranslated for the moment. It's always an approach. Mima'aseinu, from our deeds. Me'etzvon yodeinu, from the frustration of our handiwork. Min ha'adoma asher erara Hashem. So these are the wishes that accompany the birth of Noach. And the reason why we left the word yinachameinu untranslated is because Rashi will address the issue and he will give a rendition of yinachameinu which perhaps for us would not be our intuitive choice. Rashi comments, Ze yinachameinu, yaniach mimenu. Rashi takes the word yinachameinu as a contraction of two words, yaniach mimenu, he will relieve us or give us respite from what? Esetzvon yadeinu, the frustration of our handiwork. And what does this mean? This is Rashi quoting the Medrash. Ad shelo ba Noach, lo hayalhem klei machresha. The first positive development of Noach was practical in the extreme. Before Noah came, and of course everyone's looking to make a living, and the earth isn't really giving, and moreover, they didn't really have proper tools to use. Before Noah's time, they didn't have proper plowing tools. Lo hayalem klei machresha, v'hu hechin lahem. And he prepared these for them. This was the einfall, this is the brainwave of Noah. That if you really want to get the best out of the earth under the circumstances, so plow it first. No one had ever thought of this before. Or maybe they thought of the idea, but they hadn't used anything that could be of great effect. The Haisa Haaretz, Motzia, Kotzim, V'Dardarim, and moreover, and this is a second point now. After all, one of the curses of Adam was V'Kotz V'Dardar Tatzmiachloch. However well you try, it will still give forth thorns and thistles, even if you plant wheat. And that abated in the time of Noah. Things got better. Perhaps these two things are connected. Perhaps they're two separate things. The quality of the produce increased. And it was easier for them to plow the land. Says Rashi, v'zeh yinachamein. That's the meaning of yinachamein. With Noach came a bit of respite. And now Rashi says, I know what you're thinking. When you see the word yinachamein and you try and fathom the root of that word, you probably think it's an expression of nechama, which is fair. Says Rashi, you can't. If you don't understand that yinachameinu is really two words, yaniach mimenu, so really it's hanacha, which is relief and respite. If you think it's an expression of nechama, which is comfort, ein tam hanoshon nofel al hashem. The reason given for the name doesn't fit the name, because he's called Noach. Vatatzorch likrushima Menachem. Should it be called Menachem? Or Nachman, as the Medrash says. One of those. Something which has Nechama in the root of the name. But the name only has Noach. So if the name has Noach, then the words that explain the name must be an explanation that relates to the concept of Noach. And not of Nechama. And therefore, says Rashi, Yinachameinu means Yaniach Mimenu. He made life a little bit easier for us. Now, it's very interesting to consider, Mefarshim raised the question, here's Lamech, he has a child, he gives him a name, and the name, it seems, is based on, well, at least partially, future events. Noach invented the plow. When? As a baby? And presumably he grew up and looked around and came to conclusions. But his father gives him a name when he's born. And in fact, the Medrash itself raises this question. Is Lemecha, is he a Navi? He's a prophet. He will discover the plow. And if you're too smart, you should discover the plow. So how can he give him a name based on something that hasn't happened? We should know, by the way, as much as this question seems to be very reasonable, the premise of the question is not so straightforward. It is the position of the Vilna Gaon in his Perush HaDeres HaLiyom that the name Noach that was given to this individual was not given when he was a baby. He may have been called something else. Presumably he was called something else. They didn't hold him in anonymity until he did something of distinction. But the name of Noah, says the Gaon, actually only came when they began to see signs that that's the name that he attained. And sometimes it happens that way. That the name that we know the person by may have become attached to them later on in life. So in fact, the question becomes the answer for the Vilna Gaon. How could it be that he called him Noah before these things happened? It may very well be that he called him Noah after these things happened. However, Rishonim are of the understanding, which perhaps is the simpler understanding, that this was the name given to him as a child. And if that is the case, the question returns, how can you call him Noah? These things haven't happened yet. There is a sefer, one of the later Rishonim, it's called Paneach Raza. And he explains that when Lemech said these words, Zeyinachameinu, they were not words of prophecy. And we're not aware that Lemech was a prophet. There are other people who were prophets at this time. Lemech is not on that list. So how can he say this if he doesn't know? It says, Paneach Raza, Lemech isn't saying these words as a prediction. He's saying these words as a prayer, as a hope. Here was a child that was born, and Lemech says, I hope that this child brings us respite. I hope that he makes life easy for us. And should we ask the question, well, how does Lemech know that it's appropriate to daven for such a thing? After all, many children have been born. Manishtanaha, child hazeh, that when he's born, so this could be the one. Is there anything special about him? He's a child born, that's a cha'olam. Says Paneach Raza, something fascinating. Mankind lives under the cloud of the curses of Adam HaRisha. Kotz v'dadar, tatzmiach lach, and life is difficult. Now, those klolim, in a sense, are there to stay, those klolos. However, certain of the curses are attached to the life of Adam. For example, it says, it says the expression "kol yemei chayecha," with regards to at least one of the curses. To track down which one, we can find it here. Beitzavon tochalena kol yemei chayecha perek gimel pasuk yud zayin. Beitzavon tochalena, with frustration and difficulty, kol yemei chayecha. Now, in an extended sense, that every person as long as he lives. But it was said first and foremost to Adam. Adam HaRishon, says Paneach Raza, lived, as we know, Pasuk says, 930 years. Noach was the first child mentioned in the Torah to be born after the passing of Adam HaRishon. We know the flood came in the year 1560-something, and that's the 600th year of Noach, which means that he is born in 960-something. That's, of course, starting from Adam. So Adam dies at 930. The first child to be born in terms of the Ishtalshelet HaDoros, a few decades later, is Noach. And therefore, it was a time of hope. There was a certain feeling that perhaps we've emerged to some degree from the shadow of the curses of Adam. May this be the one in his time, and maybe through his own agency, to help us get out. The Marshal, just a third approach again, addressing the question, how can a Lemech know that this child will help, he'll make things easier? Rashi, we should note, has mentioned two things. He's mentioned making life easier, mima'aseinu, umeitzavon yadeinu, our actions and the frustrations of our deeds. Those are two separate things, and Rashi has actually qualified both of them. On the one hand, ma'aseinu is the way that they would work the land. In other words, they didn't have tools, and Noah would give them tools. Itzavon yadeinu bi'itzavon tachalena is the second aspect, that the produce was lower quality. And therefore, the Maharshal, Rabbi Shlomo Luria, in his comments, Yiriyat Shlomo, to Rashi's commentary, he suggests that perhaps of these two things, although one of them would have to wait until Noah grew up to be able to develop the plow, that's Ma'aseinu, but Itzavon Yadeinu perhaps had already stopped with the birth of Noah, and therefore the produce had become better. The entry of Noah into the world already showed signs, and therefore, as Rashi himself says, Yenachameinu Yaniach Mimenu es Itzavon Yadeinu. He mentions the second aspect first, that perhaps had already happened, and therefore Lamech has good reason to be optimistic that Noah will do much in this regard to make life easier from the curses of Adam. So, all of this is discussion that is spawned by Rashi's explanation that Yenachameinu is actually, as we mentioned, a contracted form of two words, Yaniach Mimenu, from the word Hanocha. It can't be Nechama. I mean, Nechama is not antithetical to this hope, but Nechama, he should have been called Menachem. That's Rashi's point. However, we should note that other Rishonim differ on this very question with Rashi. The Radak, and we have the Radak, Rabbi David Kimchi, we have his Perush on Bracious. Radak indeed explains, Zeyin Achameinu means he should bring us Nechama. It's an expression of comfort. And should you say, says Radak, that, well, so then why is he called Noah? I mean, which is, of course, Rashi's question. Shouldn't he be Menachem? Is that a problem? Zach says, no, I don't think it's a problem. Because the derech of giving a name, it's enough that it has a certain association with the wish. It doesn't have to check out grammatically. There's no baldikduk there checking that the wish that you attach to the name actually is present within the root of the name itself. So even if the wish is Nechama, which is comfort, you don't have to call him Menachem, you can call him Noach, two out of three, it's okay. Says Radak, not only do I maintain this to be the case, but I'll demonstrate it. The Navi Shmuel, and this is the Haftarah for first year Rosh Hashanah. So why is he called Shmuel? His mother, Chana, calls him Shmuel because she says, Ki me'eis Hashem she'iltihu. I have asked him of Hashem. Says Radak, so if his name derives from the fact that he was asked of Hashem, she'iltihu, should have called him Shaul. Where'd the men come from? Rather, we see, says Radak, that ein medaktik in b'shemos. He can call him Shmuel, and Shmuel's got Sha'il in it, and you didn't call him Shaul. It's okay, it doesn't matter. It's interesting to note a kind of a conservation of matter, almost, whereby the mem that should have been part of Noah's name for Nechama ended up in Shmuel's name, so it somehow the mem got in there. But this is the proof of the Radak that even if he's called Noach and it's Menachem and Shmuel is Shaul and it's all okay. Very interesting. What's more interesting is the Radak in his Perush to Sefer Shmuel actually explains what the Mem is doing in the name Shmuel. He addresses the question again. We say, Chana said, Mi'ayis Hashem Shiltiyu, I asked him of Hashem, and she called him Shmuel, so what's the Mem doing? It doesn't seem to check out. Says Radak, no, the Mem is part of the name. And he actually gives a fascinating interpretation. Shmuel, she says, Me'ayis Hashem Shiltiv. How much of that is compacted within his name? On the one hand, he is asked, but asked from who? Asked from Hashem. Says Radak, the name Shmuel begins with a shin and ends with aleph vav lamed, which is Shaul, but it also has a mem also ending with the aleph lamed, because it actually there's two waves that roll over the name. Shmuel is Shaul me'el. That's me'es Hashem she'iltiv. That is as economic as one can get. With the letters, there are actually two words that are compacted into the name Shmuel. So It's very interesting that the Radak, although he was in a sense more lenient in his commentary to Parshas Bereishis and Shmuel, you can see that it's Shaul, but the letters don't have to check out, not all of them, and similarly Noach and Menachem, but in Sefer Shmuel they actually did check out. We should mention the comment of the Chasam Sofer in the Tshuvas, and we've discussed this in Parshas Vayishlach many years ago, that he explains that although his name should have been Shaul, just discussing Shmuel for a moment, if it's Meis Hashem She'el Tiv, it should have been Shaul, Chana didn't want to call him Shaul. She avoided calling him Shaul. Why? Because the only person in history to date was someone of not such high moral fiber. And that is, in Parshas Vayishlach, you have Malchi Edom. We gloss over it, but the first person in history to be called Shaul was one of those kings. And those kings were not such great tzaddikim. And we have a principle that one gives the name of a tzaddik, one doesn't give the name of a person who had still a work in progress, as they would say. And therefore, because the first Shaul was not such a great person, as much as she was looking for the root of Shaul, but she didn't want to call him Shaul, she called him Shmuel. And the Chasam Sofer goes on to say, and for this you need to be the Chasam Sofer to say it, someone who was less careful about this were the parents of Shaul. Says Chasam Sofer, Re'ema Olsalo, and see what happened. They had difficult times. So the Chasam Sofer places a great deal of emphasis into the choice of a name, and this is the third approach to how the concept of Shaul became the name of Shmuel. So this is the background of Noach, and in Parshas Bereishis, and it will lead us straight into the beginning of Parshas Noach. As we'll see, Noach, in the first Pasuk, in Perek Vav, Pasuk Tes, is described with three appellations. Eile told us, Noach, Noach ish tzaddik, he's a tzaddik, he's Tomim. Now Tomim brings with it a qualifying phrase, Bederosov, about which a great deal has been said. But Tomim itself means, translated to complete. Eso lukim es halach Noach. Noach goes with Hashem. So he's a tzaddik, he's a Tomim, Eso lukim es halach Noach. And it's always important to bear in mind, because the focus often becomes on Bederosov. You know, he wouldn't be such a tzaddik in the time of Avram. The Pasuk says he was a tzaddik, Tomim, and he went with Hashem. That's more than the Pasuk says about most other people. That shouldn't get lost in the mix. The question is, what is the connotation of these three titles? Of these three praises or levels? Tzaddik, Tomim, Eso lukim es halach Noach. They're obviously all heading in the same direction, but clearly there are three distinct milas. Noach is discussed, interestingly, in the very beginning of the Medrash in Sefer Tehillim. There is a special collection of Midrashim, aside from the Alkit Shimonu, which runs through all of Tanakh, there's a special collection of Midrashim on Tehillim called Medrash Shocher Tov. It's called Shocher Tov, as is often the case with Midrashim. The name of the Medrash becomes attached to it by the first words that the Medrash discusses. If you look in the beginning of the Medrash on Tehillim, the very first words quoted in that Medrash are the words Shocher Tov, which is actually from Mishlei. Shocher Tov Yom Tzaratzo. And therefore, at this point, the Medrash on Tehillim becomes known as Medrash Shocher Tov. As we know, the opening pasuk of Tehillim, Ashri Ha'ish, Ashalo Halach Batzas V'Shoim, Uve Derech Hatorim Lo Omad, Uve Moshe Abitzim Lo Yoshav. So the pasuk speaks in praise of someone he didn't get involved, not with Rishoim, and not with Chatoim, and not with Tzadikim. Chatoim here don't refer to sins, they refer to sinners. When there's a dogish in the test, it refers to sinners, like we say, Anshe Sodom, Ro'im V'Chatoim. Says the Medrash Shocher Tov, this pasuk refers to Noach. For Noach managed to avoid keeping the company of these three types of groups. He never got involved with Rishayim, he never got involved with Chataim, he never got involved with Leitzim. And moreover, says the Medrash, it refers specifically to the three problematic generations that Noach lived through, Bidarosav. You have, on the one hand, Dor Enosh. Now, Enosh, in the Pasuk, doesn't speak that much about him, but Rashi already comments for us that, for us, in the time of Enosh, the move towards Avodah Zorah already began. And that's actually how the Rambam, in Hilchos Avodah Zorah, in the Mishnah Torah, begins. Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph, Bimei Enosh To'u Bnei Adam. He explains and traces back the move after Avodah Zorah to the time of Enosh. The second problematic era or group for Noah was the Dor HaMabul, of course, and he also went on to live in the time of the Dor HaPlaga, which is at the end, Migdal Bavel, Tower of Babel. He didn't get involved in any of them. And therefore, says the Medrash, you see, when it says he didn't lo halach batas Rishoyim, he didn't go with Rishoyim, didn't go with Chatoyim, didn't go with Leitzim, it means he wasn't involved, not with Enosh, and not with the generation of the flood, and not with the generation of Migdal Bava. The question is, how specifically, if we may ask, do we see these three times of Enosh and Dor HaMabul and Dor HaPlaga, how do they correspond to these designations of Rishaim and Chataim and Leitzim? I mean, they're all negative, but how do they line up? Zel u'mazda. And this Medrash is explained in a most wonderful way by the Shem Yishmuel, the Sokotchover Rebbe. And the basis of the matter, says Shem Yishmuel, and this is in fact based on the writings of the Maharal in many places, is that there are three primary forces within a person, the three things that could drive a person. And each one can be used for good, each one can be corrupted and used for bad. There is, on the one hand, just going from the ground up, there is the guf, there are physical drives and physical living. There is what's called nefesh. And nefesh, says Maharal, relates to personality. Even a plant has physical growth, but it isn't until one gets into the animal kingdom that one sees aspects of personality, that is to say, dominance. Who's alpha, who's beta, and who are the rest? Those issues of territory and ascendancy and that accrues to the area of nefesh. That's behavior and personality and interaction with others. And then there is the faculty, thirdly, of seichel, of the intellect. As we can appreciate, all of these can be used for positive or for negative. And if we consider the notion that they can be used for negative, we should confront the idea that the original chait, the chait Eitz Hadas, actually was comprised of all three. And in a sense, that's what made it such a terrible Aveira, even though every Aveira is terrible, but it really impacted and enlisted every one of these three faculties. How do we see this? As the Nachash is looking to entice Chava, she doesn't want to eat, she doesn't want to touch, but he starts to remonstrate with her. In Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hei, he says, no, you should know. If you eat from this tree, v'yisem kelokim, yodei tovara, could work out well for you. V'yisem kelokim, you'll be like this very powerful force. Yodei tovara. What is the meaning of the words v'yisim kelokim? We may have put them all together. V'yisim kelokim yodei tov v'ra. Like Hashem, you will know good and evil. But Rashi actually separates them. V'yisim kelokim is a separate appeal. It says Rashi v'yisim kelokim because elokim refers to power. Balakochos. It says Anachosh, if you eat from this tree, you will be as powerful as Hashem. And you will be able to create worlds. Just like he does. That's the pitch. V'yisim kelokim. And that is the potential corruption of nefesh, because nefesh is the will to power. And if someone offers you the possibility that you can become as powerful as Hashem, you have to reckon with that. Yode tova ra, of course, refers to the faculty of seichel. You will know things in a way that Hashem doesn't want you to know things. It's a corruption of seichel. And of course, all of this is aside from the most obvious aspect of the fruit, and that is that it looks amazing and probably tastes fantastic, which is a physical pull. And therefore, within the words of the Nachash, you see he's appealing to each of the three faculties of Chava, and then by extension Adam. And we see in the next pasuk, Vatere Ha'isha, what did she see? She saw three things. She bought into all of these three arguments. On the one hand, she says, Ki tov ha'etz lamachal. It's good. How is it good? Says Rashi, it will be good for me. I'll do well by this. I will advance. V'yisem kelokim. I'll be able then to create worlds. Next, what else did she see? V'chitava hu la'inayim. It looked physically very appealing. That's the guf is being drawn in. V'nechmad ha'etz lahaskil. And it was desirous because it would give her great insight, great knowledge. And therefore, she was brought round what the Nachash said, that she would do well in all of these three areas. In the area of nefesh, she'd become more powerful. In the area of guf, it would be physically enjoyable. In the area of the intellect, she'd become much more wise. And that was the first chet. From there, from the original act that encompassed all of these three faculties, we now come to consider the three generations, the three problematic eras that accompanied the life of Noah. For again, they are Dor Enosh, generation of Enosh, the Dor HaMabul of the flood, and Dor HaPlaga. What was the specific problem in each of these three times? Well, Dor Enosh, as we said, was the move towards Avodah Zarah, which is the corruption of Seichel, understanding how the world works and where a person should put his allegiance. It's a mistake in understanding the nature of the world. That's Dor Enosh. Second, Dor HaMabul, as we know, unfortunately, what typified the Dor HaMabul is that they acted like behemoths. They followed every animal desire, kishchis kol basar as darko, and they were stealing from each other and they acted like animals. It was unbridled physical existence. Dor HaPlaga, or Dor HaPlaga more correctly, that generation of Migdal Bavel, what did they want? It's the most enigmatic of the three generations, because the Torah tells us very little, but apparently it tells us enough, at least as a direction. They said, what will we get from this enormous tower? Havan nivlanu ir, migdal roshah b'shamayim, v'naaseh lanu shem. We'll make for ourselves a name. The idea of making a name is eminence. We'll make our mark. We'll ascend as high as we can. They're looking to promote themselves as much as possible. And that is a corruption of the faculty of nefesh. And therefore, one could almost say that what began in one act, all these three faculties were corrupted, then played itself out over three generations where each one became the focus for that time. And this brings us to the three types of negative people. You see how thoroughly the Shem Yishmuel is working this through. The Pasuk spoke about happy is the person, he didn't throw his lot, not with Chatoim, and not with Rishoim, and not with Leitzim. Who's a Rasha? What does a Rasha mean? Says the Shem Yishmuel, Rasha, Chote, and Leitz correspond to these three faculties. Each one is a corruption of one of those three. Rasha specifically, says the Shem Yishmuel, refers to a corruption of the area of Nefesh. The Pasuk says in the Mishle, Nefesh Rasha Ivsara. The dominant factor for, that defines someone as a Rasha is that their nefesh is leading them in the wrong way. Chote. Chote refers, the specific connotation, when they're put together, each one has their specific connotation, refers to matters of the guf. And in fact, it's for this reason that we normally use the word chet, when we've just been through the video of Yom Kippur, chatanu, avinu, pashanu, what's the specific connotation of the word chet? The Gemara talks about this in Maseches Yuma, Daf Lamed Vav. The Gemara says that chet, as we know, refers specifically to a shogeg, to something done unintentional. And in fact, for something done unintentional, one brings a korban chatos. The idea of something unintentional means it was a pure body experience. It wasn't premeditated and it wasn't done with any bad intention at all. The person was just very simply careless. But physically, they did something wrong. And therefore, a chote refers specifically to a corruption of physical existence. Leitz is someone who mocks things, and that's a corruption of seichel. From mockery takes the form of the guise of deeper insight. As if to say, people take this idea seriously because they don't understand it fully. If they understood it as deeply as I do, if they saw what was behind it, they wouldn't take it that seriously. All of cynicism, essentially, is that. It takes the form of higher wisdom. The proletariat understands to a certain degree, which leads them certain values. I understand to the higher degree, and therefore I perceive them to be not values. And so we see that the categories of Risha'im and Chata'im and Leitzim refer to these three areas again of Nefesh and Guf and of Seichel, and that is why the three categories mentioned at the beginning of Tehillim come to refer to these three generations, for each one was led astray in one of these areas. Atzas Risha'im is the area of Nefesh, that's Dor HaPlaga. Derech HaTorim is the area of Guf, which is the Dor HaMavel, and Moshav Leitzim is the area of Seichel, that's the Avodah Zarah of Enosh. And then we come to Noach. Noach stands firm. Again, he's often criticized for his lack of outreach, but should be praised for the fact that he didn't get swept along, one person against everyone else. He stands firm, him with his family or certain members of his family, against all of these climate changes. And this, Hashem Yishmuel, brings us to the three words, terms that are employed in praise of Noah in the beginning of the Parsha. He's called the Tzaddik, he's called the Tamim, and he's called Esther Elokim is Halech Noach. And we asked, generally, they're all positive. Specifically, what's the niche of each one? The first is Tzaddik, and Tzaddik is easiest to define because it's the opposite of a Rasha. If Rasha is a corruption, as we saw, Nefesh, Rasha, Ibsara, corruption of Nefesh, Tzaddik is a person who acts correctly with regards to the faculty of Nefesh. Tamim. Tamim refers to perfection in physical terms. The next person that's called Tamim, in fact the only person in the Chumash who's called Tamim after Noach, is Avram. At the time that he's given the mitzvah of Mila, which is the final physical perfection, and that's when Hashem says, Hishalech lefai veheyeh Tamim. And finally, Esho Elokim Hishalech Noach, Noach goes with Hashem, that refers to his cognitive allegiance, which is connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as opposed to other possibilities, namely the Avodah Zarah of Enosh. And so we see, it just gives it an entirely new dimension into the opening pasuk of Noach. It's not just finding different ways to say nice things about him. Essentially, Noach's entire life is compacted into these three terms, because they refer to each area of his steadfastness and his resolve and his strength in combating the various faculties of Nefesh, Guf and Seichel. Corresponding to them, he's called a Tzaddik, Tamim, Esher Elokim Esher Elokim. That's 950 years put into 5 seconds. But what do we see? Acharei Hadvarim Ha'ele. What do we see? that these three areas were problematic from the start. What became the centerpiece of the three generations of Noah were part of the original Aveira, as we saw. And Noah withstands all of this. He's able to overcome all of this. In a sense, this gives us a deeper insight as to what we mean when we say that Noah began to reverse the effects of the curse of Adam. Historically, he's born after the death of Adam. So in a sense, perhaps it's a new era, perhaps. But he has reversed the problems of Adam, not only in the field, by creating the plow, but in terms of his character, he's reversed the character flaws of Adam. So we can understand on a, pardon me, root level, how Noah has begun to reverse the whole problems that came in the wake of Eitz Hadat. And it's a very interesting thing to appreciate about Noah. And moreover, it may well give us insight into a further enigmatic episode in the life of Noah. And that is when he comes out of the ark. And this is in Perek Tes, Pasuk Kaf, and let's have a look. Vayachal Noach Isha Adama. So Noach begins to become a man of the land. Vayita Karem. He plants a vineyard. Vayesh bin Ayayin Vayishkar. He drinks from the wine. He becomes inebriated. Vayiskal Betochalo. And he lies there uncovered in his tent. And the rest is a disaster. Cham sees him. Whatever happens. And in a sense, the only redeeming features here are Shem and Yefes, who somehow act admirably under the circumstances. But the circumstances are not good. And the Pasuk describes it so briefly, so rapidly. He's, after all, Bederech HaTeva. Without getting into extra information that we have from Midrashim, this should have taken a long time. If he became a man of the land, okay, he plants a vineyard. And then he drinks. How long does between the planting of the vineyard and the drinking? I mean, it's a while. Okay, but it's presented very, very quickly. Just one thing after the other. So no sooner has he planted, he's already the wine is already there, fermented. And the Ein Hamed Haparsha Azosa Meres Eladarsheni. And of course, there's many, many different angles and levels to understand what exactly is happening here. But Rav Shimon Schwab, in the Sefer Mayan Beis HaShoeva, presents a fascinating perspective here. We've seen that Noah succeeded, on some level, to some degree, of reversing the consequences of the Chet Eitz Hadas, in terms of his character. And also, life became easier. Projects became better. People began to see a kind of a lifting almost of the curse. He was successful to a degree. To what degree? Or to what degree did he feel that he could be successful? This is the conceptual background to this parsha of planting the vineyard and drinking the wine. The Pasuk says, Vayachel, Pasuk Kaf, Vayachel Noach Ish Adam. What does the word Vayachel mean? Perhaps we may understand on a simple level. Vayachel is from the word Latchil, and he began. But actually, the word Vayachel has already featured in this Parsha, in Parsha's Noach, and it doesn't mean to begin. It means to wait. It means to be expecting something, to be hopeful of something. Where do we find the word Vayochel? He sends out the bird and he waits. Vayochel Noach Shivas Yomi. He's waiting hoping for good news, expecting a good result, from the word tocheles, tocheles v'tikva. Adam is the original Ish Ha'adama, who came off from Min Ha'adama. Noach, based on his successes, in terms of his character, in terms of the way the world had begun to become a little bit easier, he actually hoped for more. He hoped that in his time, and maybe through his agency, he would be able to come back to be the original Ish Ha'adama. Vayachal Noach, that's what he's hoping for. That's what he's optimistic about. Maybe it's time. Well, how can he test it? What's the field test? He plants a vineyard. There is an opinion in the Gemara that the Eitz Hadas was a vine. There are other opinions also. It wasn't an apple, that's for sure. But there is an opinion in the Gemara that it was a geffen. In fact, that's one interesting to note. The origins of the concept of L'chaim, which is about as old as Judaism, are here. And in fact, L'chaim originally was said as a response. We note that before a person makes a bracha of Hagofen, he says, Savri. Now, what is the meaning of the word Savri? we would translate, generally, Savri means, I think a good translation is with your permission, gentlemen, or something like that, which is actually not true at all. It's in contrast with before you make hamotzi, you don't say Savri before hamotzi, you say Bershus. Bershus means with your permission, meaning you ask permission from all those that you wish you permission to be motzi them in the bracha. Very nice. You don't say Bershus before Agafen, you say Savri. Says the Abu Dharam in Hilchas Kiddush, Savri comes from the word Svara, which means reason and thinking. What's the point? Says the Abu Dharam, before a person drinks wine, they need to remind themselves that the first wine ever drunk was done so without thinking things through completely. And therefore, it's a dangerous thing. To drink wine, one needs to do so with correct das. And therefore, when he turns to the company and says, what do you think? Do you think there will be a good outcome? And asking the question, by the way, helps it have a good outcome. And the response to Savri is L'chaim, says Abu Dharam. Because when he says, do you think this will work out well? They say, we hope that it will. We hope this will be L'chaim. Because the first wine ever drunk was not L'chaim. It was the opposite. This, drunk in the correct way, should yes be L'chaim. So that's just the background in case you ever wondered where L'chaim comes from. That's where it comes from. Where does it go to? That's another question. So Noah plants a vineyard because he is looking to recreate. He's looking to drink wine correctly, to rectify, to get back absolutely to the heart of the matter. The original chait was through drinking wine, and he'll do it right. And that's why it says Shimon Schwab, and it's quite a thing to say, Vayiskal batoch aholo. How did that happen? I mean, what does that mean? He was intoxicated, he didn't know what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. Adam and Chava, before the Eitz Hadas, didn't have any clothes. Ayushne Marumim, below Yispo Shoshu. And Noah thinks, maybe we can get back to Gan Eden. He doesn't need his clothes anymore. That's the Chava Amina, so to speak. That's what Noah was hoping for. But it exceeded what conditions were right for, and therefore it backfired. Ham wasn't ready, not all of his progeny were ready, maybe even Noah wasn't ready. But this was the dashed hope of Noah. That's the parsha of Vayitakar. Can we get back and turn the Eitz Hadas into a mitzvah? With all that went with it? Can we get back to exactly how things used to be? Not yet. Not exactly. So these are some perspectives as to the currents that go through the life of Noah. And it's fascinating to consider, right, in terms of our takeaway. The Balaturim comments, and the Pasuk says, Vayita Esha Beber Shava. Pardon me, Vayita Kare. Balaturim comments, Gimel B'Mesora. There are three times that the Torah uses the word Vayita. First is in Parshas Bereishis. Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden. Hashem planted the garden. The second is this week's Parsha. Vayita Kare. And the third is in 2 weeks' time in Parshas Vayera. Vayita Eshel. That's Avram Avinu. He planted an Eshel. And what is an Eshel? It's an inn. It's an orchard. It's for the people to partake of. They're traveling through. And doubtless there are many messages here. Perhaps one of the most meaningful for us is that the original Vayita is Gan Eden. And now the question is, well, that's in the past. Is there any way to reconnect with that? The first one to try was Noah. The first one to try the Vayita was Noah. And he did so by hoping that the atmosphere that he had created, conditions were as they were. But that failed. Because they weren't. The world is not yet back at that stage. The second person to try was Avram. And how did he do that? Vayita Eshel. He set up an inn, an orchard, for kindness, for Kaminas Hasodim, to help the wayfarer, to help people. In a sense, what Avram is saying is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide when we can get back to Gan Eden. But in the meanwhile, our actions should connect us to Gan Eden. That's the closest you can get to Gan Eden, because the person who's traveling by, it's Gan Eden for him. Because where would he be without this kindness? And to spread chesed in the world and everything that Avraham Avinu stood for, that's Gan Eden in action. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide when it's time for Gan Eden in location. And that is those are the three vayitas. Certainly plenty to think about. We'll leave it over there for you.